Oh, it's Jason Nemro. It's 5:30 or so, not early, of a morning, and I'm back to my walk. A little brisk. There's going to be some blowing air, so the recording is going to be poor, by nature. And, enjoy walking in the dark. I don't know why that is. There's so much on the plate today. So much on the plate today. A couple of days ago, there was a shooting in Connecticut at a school, an elementary school. Murder-suicide job. And already, so the bodies are quite cold. There's our, the rhetoric is already ramped up that we need more gun control in the world. After I heard that, I immediately typed up a little email. I'll probably put it up on the blog at Quixen, Q-U-I-X-E-N .blogspot.com. If you're having problems finding it, it's always easier to go to the normal web presence, which is qix.me, and there's an obvious link there that goes to the quasi-indefatigable journalist blog, and you can see the and you can get to it that way, and it's a little easier. That's why I like qix.me. I'll post it up there along with some more thoughts, I'm sure. Maybe based on what I say here. I am a world-class lecturer, you know. I don't do a lot of discussion groups. You know, and to say that I would is to, I'm a lecturer. I'm here to give you my side of it and then sit down and shut up. You know, I'm not, they say, oh, well, you need to debate your ideas. And you go, no, I don't intend to. So I throw them out there and I walk away. Because there's always five other things behind it that need comment on as well. So, you know, because commentary stuff. Anyway, doesn't matter. I typed up this email. And it was one of my typical kind of tongue-in-cheek, but kind of honest, situation. I basically came back and said, you know, because Barack Obama came back and said, we can't just stand by and let these kinds of things happen. We have to act. We can't just keep doing this, having this happen. And I said, oh, I totally agree. We need to close down all these schools. These places are practically slaughterhouses. Trying to, on some level, to bring up the point that these are isolated cases. You know, we react to these circumstances as if it happens 20 times a day, every day, all over the nation. It says these are weird, strange, unpredictable events. Says you can't stop them from happening. Lisa's whole thing is, which I don't really agree with completely at all, is that if the guy didn't have a gun, he would have done it himself. You know, he would have used a bomb. And I say, well, yeah, maybe, I don't know. I said, honestly, I don't know if that's really a very good argument for it, but you know, it's as true as any other I've heard. The whole concept is you can't try to reshape the world based on rather rare, rather strange events. You know, every time somebody dies, and it's not from natural causes, society seems to feel the need to swoop in and make sure that never happens again. You know, that's why we have this cold circumstance after people push planes into buildings in 9/11. It's a suspicious thing. It looks totally suspicious, and the fact that so many people poo-poo that and instead revel in the fact that it was a horrible atrocity just absolutely stuns me. It really causes me to lose any faith at all that man can be rash. I said, as far as I've seen, in large, rather heinous ways, people are stupid and revel in their stupidity. And, you know, and my greatest need when those things happen, and it may not be the right reaction either, is to get away from people. At the same time, I'm constantly surprised and heartened by the fact of how wonderful people can be to each other when they're facing each other, when they're, you know, when something bad happens, how much people try to help each other. You know, I said, we're both heartened and sickened at the same time. I hope to think it's not by the same people, you know, but I'm sure I'll be disappointed there too, and find out that those people who were so heroic under those circumstances also want to make the world a colder, darker place. And I think that's what I said to Lisa this morning, that I think is really salient, needs to be said and recorded. I'll record it here. Hopefully it'll stick long enough to record on the blog, which I think gets more play. Well, that here we are, creating a colder, darker place. And that it is these acts along with just thumbing our nose at what God has commanded us to do. There's always that. I don't know what action, I don't know what circumstance finally will tip God over the edge and say, okay, I can't take it anymore. I know these are my children, but they must be destroyed. And I will be the one to destroy them. You know, you're going, oh my gosh, well, he's not a very good father. You're going, well, sorry. Circumstances being what they are. Well, anyway, the world isn't necessarily made a colder and darker place by the acts of crazed lunatics. Go on. Let's do it. You're a car. You have the right of way. I'm going to go around the other way so you don't have to be discouraged by it. Please act. You're going to be like, okay. Feeling anything, waiting to see what I was doing. Okay. So anyway, it isn't a cold, hard place by, kooks. You know, and you can sit there and try to psychoanalyze them, not to pass judgment on them. You know what? You don't have to do a thing about it. It says, he killed himself. Let God sort that out. And if you don't believe there's an afterlife, you don't even have to fret that. What are you going to do? Kick his corpse? Because I suppose you can do that if it makes you feel any better. You're not doing a dang thing to him. But go ahead. It's our rather natural inclination, and a bad one, to want to constantly get retribution for something, seek revenge, to balance the scales of justice. And it's impossible to do when the darn shooter turns the gun on himself and shoots himself. There's nothing you can do about these things. There's no amount of, you have to understand, everything you would try to do to prevent this situation from happening makes the world a colder and darker place. If that school, didn't make people sign in when they came into the building, leaves, other exits unlocked and stuff like that, those are easy things to try and stop these things. But you know what? It said he was the young son. Perhaps, nobody's willing to say for sure. Hooray, hooray for transparency. Come on, this is the 21st century. Don't tell me that within 5 minutes of it happening, and you have it in the body, that you don't have the full dossier. I can do that on the internet if I knew what the guy's name was. I knew where he lived. I could know everything about him in about 20 minutes. Gee whiz, are you guys that pathetic? Maybe I should go offer my services to him as a researcher. But they don't need it very often. Anyway, there's evidence that he was the son of a school employee, maybe even a former. They were being very cagey about the information. I don't know why. He killed her first. And, how do you protect against this situation happening again? Well, credit to those who understand that you shouldn't freeze up the whole universe and make make a virtual police state to keep an eye on everybody, to frisk everybody the minute they come out their home doors to make sure they don't have any weapons or whatever. They took the stupid out, which they should have said, this is horrible, this is tragic, let's help the people, but by and large, besides just helping that particular school, you know, and I don't know how that could even work either, that this was probably a guy who, number one, knew the school, number two, had relations with that school, and therefore would be somebody that would simply be waved in when they came in through the door, and it's simply recorded that he had come. You know. Nobody thought likely would suspect him of being able to do this, because we don't tend to suspect anybody. You know. Of course, there's really no information to draw a conclusion. And the basic attitude about it is, we're not going to give you any information. As if there's some investigation going on. There's no investigation going on. What else can you investigate? You caught the guy that did it. There's no investigation needed. You know? He's there. He's on the floor. He's dead. You don't even have to go and catch him. You don't have to do a sting operation. You don't have to track him down. He's readily available. And that's probably the most interesting thing. Well, we're still investigating this and trying to track where the weapons came from. And you go, why? What difference does that have toward anything? And you go, it's because the gun's being blamed. In lieu of having a wild, live, psychotic to pin this on, because he killed himself, now you've got to search further afield for circumstances or instruments to blame, our incredible need to vindicate somehow, to find punishment, to be able to sue somebody, you know. And so, yeah, apparently they're going after him. Well, we think he got these guns illegally, and we're going to track down the guy that gave that gun, and we're going to prosecute the crap out of him. And you go, you know what? You go, that's a witch hunt. And you don't, and the first thing you should do is your boss should say, hey, that's a witch hunt. Stop. No. And understand that you're trying to pin 26 murders on some guy that probably just didn't have a concept of gun sale laws and has slipped through the cracks somehow. There's every chance it's that guy and that he's gonna get crucified. It's like our situation here. Saint Augie Montiel, I call him Saint Augie Montiel because of the veneration of him that went on for, God, I don't know if it's over yet. I think it's over, but frankly, I don't go past that anymore. I just see it. And I'm kind of glad I don't. I don't know what it is. It could be the Catholic heart. I'm not sure. That makes you practically worship your dead children. Or your dead, you know, some dead kid. You go, oh, I hurt. And you go, you know what? You can, you know, you're totally entitled to mourn for a reasonable period. I'm sorry, 5 years? Give it a grip. He was a 12-year-old kid. Says they were still being weird about him. I'm really grateful that he decided to do some kind of memorial service with his graduating class. I was really quite happy that they didn't go to that level, that they didn't sink to that level. You know, when it's appropriate to do those kinds of things. You know, and I know, you got to deal with people's grief, but it can't last that long. Anyway. St. Augie got drunk. Apparently went into an irrigation ditch, probably about the last time we ever had water in any of our irrigation ditches. Part of our irrigation ditches go underneath streets and underneath neighborhoods, and he got caught in that and he died. Drowned himself. And it's an interesting study around everything that's going to happen in Del Rapids. Number one, we will never know the truth. We'll never know the truth. What we can know is how people react. He had an older sister, and she ended up being kind of the lead harpy on wanting to make the world a better place so this never happens again. And I was very hard to get her money thing. She called for, you know, a lot more fencing around the canal to prevent 12-year-olds from getting anywhere near the irrigation ditches. And they came back and said, oh, that's patently silly. Number one, we don't have the money. Number two, it's not going to stop a determined 12-year-old. Nothing will stop a determined 12-year-old from doing something stupid. And they didn't phrase it that way. Anyway. Well, then, you know, they start doing an investigation around it, which is really silly. They said, this is a simple, stupid, irresponsible kid who's irresponsible as hell. You know, it was simply that. And one doesn't have to investigate it much beyond that. Well, I got this idea beyond that. They tracked down everything. They figured out where the kid got drunk, and it was at some party. It was going on somebody's house. The people who had the house, I don't know if it was ever particularly clear if they were actually present or if they weren't. The supposition was they were present. They each had to do several years in jail for contributing to the delinquency of a minor, for allowing a minor to have access to alcohol, yada, yada, yada. They said, and that's what really got me, was the fact that you guys are searching for somebody to crucify over every little thing that causes any amount of pain at all. You've made some probably completely innocent people's lives a living hell. And you go, is there a chance that they broke some laws? Absolutely. But let me tell you, are they pretty stupid and vindictive laws? Absolutely. Absolutely. Lisa was telling me about when her sister got killed by a drunk driver. Both her sister and that sister's daughter were in the car. The mom died. The child, I forget how old she was. Seven, eight, something like that. She survived but had a lot of problems. You know, she was in the hospital a long time while they were trying to fix her, patch her back up. I give great applause to my in-laws in this situation. They didn't press charges at all. against the drunk driver. Of course, you know, he was still prosecuted. They weren't going to be a party to some kind of vindictive damages. His only crime was that he was drunk, you know. I know it's a really easy place to say, you hurt me, therefore, you know, you're going to pay, and you're going to pay dearly. Sadly, the hospital bills got beyond anybody's ability to pay for it. And they ultimately had to sue him for, it was a kid. It was a kid that took his parents' car. Because the whole question, do you have permission or didn't you? I don't know. And they ended up suing the drunk kid's family to help pay for the medical bills. And that's kind of, you know. And while they were doing it, my in-laws apologized. And I'm really sorry that we have to do this, but, you know, we really can't handle the amount of these bills. And you go, and I'm sorry, you know. So like, there's really nobody else to get it from besides you. And, you know, it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. Somebody died, and another person's life was rendered really difficult. And, it was quite, it was tragic. But the fact that we range out looking for people to blame, people to punish, when it's very obvious that bad stuff happens. I am not in favor, when I was on a jury. Well, I wasn't on a jury. I was doing jury duty, and case came up. A guy was caught drunk driving. Nothing happened. I am firmly against weird sentencing for circumstances. You know, this guy was, apparently he had done this several times. You know, and my contention is, fine him. Why are we sitting here having this conversation? You know, it says punish him for what he has done, not for the potential of what he could do. And I said, and I was, you know, people were staring daggers at me. It was really telling when, you know, someone said, yeah, I had a brother who got pulled from drunk driving, and he got what he deserved. And you go, you know, he did jail time, and you're going, God, my. And you go, I'm a guy that's, you know, and I'm not saying I'm right, you know, because I don't know what right or wrong is on this. He says, but I don't think we hear enough voices. This is especially a case where I don't think we should punish people particularly until they actually, you know, do something authentically wrong. It says, is anybody dead? Did anybody get their lives damaged? Did he run into something? I said, those are definite actions that need to be prosecuted. He says, if he was being a reckless driver, I said, as far as I know, that's an offense for which you get a ticket, and that we're not going to go out of our way to figure out why you're being reckless. You know? Otherwise, we're going to have 500 different rules and 500 different laws, politically charged ones, too. You know, we punish you this way if you were high on meth. We'll punish you this way if you were, you know, doing marijuana. We punish you this way if you were drunk. Heck, now we're all starting to talk about, well, how evil is it if you're talking on a cell phone and your car is moving? And saw a recorded episode of MythBusters where they were talking about how impaired are you with a cell phone. They got these guys doing this driving test. Well, they had questions, weird questions that required a little bit of thought, thrown at them over a cell phone. And yeah, they sucked at the driving test with their cell phone going. I'm grateful that they didn't decide to make a campaign out of it. You know. In fact, according to that, maybe some even some other evidence, cell phone use is actually more problematic for driving than being drunk is. You know, how do we handle that? How do we deal with those circumstances? Because, you know what? I said, I don't have a clue. Says, but all I know is I'm not prepared to throw people in jail for distracted driving, which, you know, is just another, you know, it's just probably another definition for drunk driving or whatever, or people would like it to be that. You know, I'm not interested in people going to jail for a certain number of days because a harried mom was trying to quiet her kids in the back of a car and she was distracted from her driving. I don't want that to happen. I think there is a certain way to handle things. I think laws that say if you're inebriated, you know, and somehow, you know, because I don't know how you're supposed to determine that, you know, I like the fact that this is most often handled through social pressure, as opposed to, you know, jail time being a thing. You know, you need to have a designated driver. If you're going to go out and you're going to drink and you're going to party, you need to have somebody take you home that's not doing that. You need to pay for his sodas, or however he's participating in the party. I think that's half how Shayna got through one of her semesters in college was people paying her to be the designated driver. She didn't have a car. She had to borrow somebody else's car to do it. Anyway, so. That, you know, and when I was sitting there in the jury selection, I was scared to death because there were several people that seemed rabid, that were out for blood. This guy has done nothing. Nobody was hurt. Everybody was fine. So I'm not saying that he was being responsible. I'm not saying that at all. He says, but is being irresponsible a jailable offense? And when I saw what other people were doing and the kind of red that was in their eyes, I saw plenty of people who were quite willing to throw him in jail and throw away the key for him being impaired, a bit impaired. We're not sure what that is, you know, while he was driving. And that, you know, wasn't gonna go there. So yeah, I made my plea, and I knew that when I said that was over, I wasn't gonna be chosen for that jury. And I identified myself as a jury nullification guy, which most of the parties involved in these things do not want to have, you know, because then it becomes a much larger issue. You know, they say, well, he isn't going to rule so much on just the facts of this case. He is actually going to rule on whether this thing should be punished at all. He's almost got a philosophical hang up. So yeah, it was obvious I was going to get thrown out. The judge made sure I got thrown out, you know. Or didn't get chosen, not thrown out. I didn't get chosen. And as long as he's on that bench and he sees me and he knows me, he's going to say, okay, I'm not going to, you know. They said, I don't think I'm not going to have him pulled into jury duty. But he'll never serve. He'll never serve on one. If I can make his life a little miserable by making sure he shows up every summons. You know. Trust me, there's a bit of a price to pay for my outlook on life. And they were very kind to say, you know what, you're entitled to that and you can speak it. We still have a country like that. We're not going to throw you in jail because of your beliefs. And you go, that's true today. It says there's no telling that I wouldn't do that tomorrow. But I'm also very upfront. We're going to close these doors. They're always left open. Not always, but often. Anyway, so and let me tell you, law enforcement and the justice system deal with some pretty interesting things. My tendency is always to err on the side of perpetrators. You know, because that's probably one of the first things, because you've got to have unequivocal evidence that this guy did something, that it was exactly what you said he did, and that it's something that can't be tolerated. You know, and people are always on about, oh, the whole part of justice system is to win justice, and I think their definition of justice will skew for victims. You know, somebody is hurt, and therefore we must win retribution for victims. And you're going, you know what? I am firmly on the other side of that. I said, I think we should handle victims differently. I don't think that a victim's feelings about any of this should be considered at all. Because you can't even begin to be unbiased. When it strives to be, it's so amazing, it makes the headlines. There's this fella, and there's another drunk driving kid circumstance. Some of his family got killed in a drunk driving accident. The kid survives. The drunk kid always survives. I don't know what it was. Funny. I think it's part of a test. to see how people will be. And he frankly forgave him. And they became friends because he wanted to help this kid with his life. And it's just stunning. And the sad part is, it's stunning. And it shouldn't be. These kinds of things should be happening all the time. It really does. It really does. The word is indicated. I forget the word. It's not true. It indicts. There you go. There's the word. It indicts. And time. That when these things happen, we don't show mercy. We want revenge, vengeance. We want to kill. And there's a lot of things about them that were praiseworthy. Because they weren't hell-bent on making this guy's life a living hell for the rest of his life. You know? Now, you have to understand, because the way our justice system is set up, even if you say, okay, I'm not going to press charges on this guy, don't worry, the justice system will basically do this for you. Well, we're going to punish him anyway. In fact, it's mandated by law. We've got so upset about truck drivers. We've decided they are the greatest scourge on humanity. So we're going to make them all pay. I don't drink. I'm never going to be, I am never going to be a drunk driver. I'm not going to say that I'm not going to be in weird situations where I might be accused of it, and I might even get convicted of it. I'll be bad. Because categorically, as a devout farmer, I don't drink. Everybody gets blamed. My thought is, number one, we shouldn't be getting weird about distracting people. We live in difficult times. I can harken back 100 years when public drunkenness was basically the disorderly conduct. And they may keep you in jail at night until you sober up and then send you on your way. Maybe fine you too. Of course, those are the days before you were in control of a ton of damage and kill a lot of people with that disorderly conduct. I understand that too. But I think it becomes more of a test of our character. Now I think that sadly, when I look at it, I see it as our failure to be able to exercise our better natures. That when it comes to character, we have failed. And we are low, vindictive, nasty creatures in the main. If you were to judge us, and let me be really honest, I think our leaders, our legislators, our presidents, that present themselves as our representatives, as those who serve, you know, who we need to have be wise for us, to fail. And I think that God might drop a lot of us out of I go, be judged on that. And you go, hell yeah, you're going to be judged on that. You voted for it. I mean, you know, there was pressure for my party. There was another piece of legislation I really wanted to go through, so I said that if that guy would vote for my legislation, I would have necessity. That you think has a pure heart, who we think has the same kind of that you think they're on your side and going to go to the halls of legislature and play the con man act there in your favor, you know? Because you're dealing with con artists. Oh, gosh. So I want good people in positions of leadership and how you're going to handle this. And how you need to sit down with people when a tragedy has happened. And they just deal with their with their fist clenched. And you're not sitting there trying to win retribution for them. You sit there and you try to calm down those fists. And you go, this is a horrible thing that happened. He says, I know you're in pain, and I know it's only natural for you. You're saved by the fact that he already, because a lot of victims would have wanted to crucify his mom for the sins of her son. So he saved you. Wake up every day, cry, you know, you need to work through all of it. You don't need to go to, you don't need to go to the investigation. You don't need to get together particularly with the other victims with the intent to try to make sure this never happens. He says there's nothing you can do. He was not vindictive. This was your only child. That's part of your grief, is the fact that now you aren't a parent anymore, and that is just as anything else is. Says, I know it doesn't sound very, you know, well, you're not being very kind, you're not being very respectful of my daughter, and you go, you know what? It says, we don't have to sit here and worry too much about how your daughter feels about this. Says there's basically two ways you can look at this. Either number one, you're a believer sort of person, and you have to know that they're in a far better place. A place where likely they're being taken care of far better than you could ever do. It says, if you're a non-believer, you don't have to get into that stuff. You know, it says, they're gone. You don't have to do anything for them. It says, yes, understand that what you're doing right now is for yourself, and you can only concentrate on yourself for a short period of time before the rest of the world really needs you to go back to being a person that doesn't, you know, that is looking out for and caring for and helping other people. It says nobody can afford to have you grinding away at this for years. It says there's going to be hard times. You know, the anniversaries of these things tend to be difficult. Says, but we can't have you doing that. You need to move on. You know, tomorrow is going to come, and you need to proceed with tomorrow. But for the next little while, we need to take care of you. We need to help you. But we also need you to get past this. Especially this dark period of vindictiveness. You gotta get past that. And we need to help you do that just as much as we need to help, you know. We need to help you solve your problems. Or to, you know, we need to help you mourn for that death. And for a life taken tragically short. Tragedy and heartache happen to most people on a regular basis. Because I read the stories of the past and the horrible things they had to go through, most of their children dying. Usually of things that they can't do anything about. That the only person they can possibly blame for what happens is God. And the funny thing is, at least back in the old days, they used to come out of it still being faithful people, still believing in God, believing that God loves them, and believing that God wants the best for them. And so, you know, this is, we don't need to make people's lives miserable, you know, and you being, this is because people will come wanting to pump you up, wanting you to go on some lecture tour, wanting to actually keep you constantly weird about this stuff. For political reasons, you know, gun control activists will want you to keep coming out and talking about your pain and crying on cue, you know, because they want something to happen. You have to understand that's selfish, that's cruel, and that's nasty, and it's not going to do you an ounce of good. You have to understand those people's motives. And sadly, you're just going to have to avoid them. There's no way you can do much to them except just to stay away from them and say, I'm not going to participate in that. And I think that's really important. Of course, everybody has their choices. You can choose to go that route. The money's good. But just know that if you pattern your life that way, you have to know when your usefulness is reduced, when what you say doesn't have the same impact, they'll drop you like a limp rag. And people who were your friends, who you thought you were your friends, in this weird crusade that you got kind of started or that you got recruited into, that they're not going to be your friends anymore. They will start befriending the next victim of some atrocious act. And, you know, sick. It's sick, it's twisted. But it's seeable. It says you need to be around people who care about you and who care about where the journey you need to take and the road you need to be on and where you need to go. And that's, and those are the people that you need to be with, not with somebody who says, hey, you know what, this is a wonderful opportunity, why don't you come help us with it? We're going to get guns out of the hands of law-abiding people so that only criminals have guns. So when one guy with one shotgun decides that he wants to do some damage, for whatever reason he has, you know, that he doesn't get to unload every single piece of ammunition he has. Have you noticed lately? The guys who are calculating and doing this stuff, they come with several weapons and something akin to ammo belts. They come ready to do big damage. And you're going, the only thing that will stop them from doing that is other people, specifically other people with guns. Or other people willing to act very courageously and face down that gun and just go after it. You know, if you're with somebody who's doing this, you're probably not going to talk them down. That's Hollywood. That's Hollywood that says that you can have a conversation with these people. So I guess sometimes you can. I'd say by and large, if you're trying to talk to them, you better hope you have a telephone, because if they can see you, you're dead. You know, I've got the gun, I'm looking to kill people. I don't really, you know, and we don't know what his motives were. And I don't even think, knowing if we knew their motives, if it would even be useful. I'm not even sure that would be so. I'm trying to think of a circumstance where knowing their motive would help at all. That's only useful if you don't know who shot them and you're trying to figure out who did it so you can punish them. You don't have to, you know, that's useless here. That's useless here. Because we don't have motive detectors. We don't have those. I don't know how we can have those. It would be a really cold and a really dark world if we did. Because they would be putting us all through motive scanners. Do you remember the book 1984 and the whole concept of thought police? That's exactly what that kind of thing would be. So, don't, you know, this is, and I don't want us to go down that road. And the sad thing is, I'm scared to think that most people would love to go down that road if they felt they could. They would do it in a hot minute and with joy in their heart. I love you. Because my family driving past me. We're back to the old thing, which I like. For a while there, the church didn't have heat, so they didn't have seminary at the church. I passed by the church. So my family, or a big chunk of my family, would drive past and wave at me and then say, yeah, Dad, we love you. You know what? That just keeps you going. That just keeps you going. Everybody needs that stuff. Everybody does. And if you lose some people along the way to tragedy or to other things, you need it even more. You know, not a heart full of revenge, which is, I guess, what all this, you know, we're seeing it played out as a play. You know, oh, this is, you know, and our justice system is set up this way. You know, and you can say, well, why is it done that way? You go, well, it's for several reasons, but, you know, this is nobody. The only way you can avoid it from happening is if you just drop the issue and say, you know what, I'm not gonna press charges. And everybody says, well, okay. Well, there's nothing else to do. They're not going to do anything. And you go, that's really the only logical and only kind thing to do. It's just to say, you know what? This is, I'm going to go deal with my grief over here. And let's just not go there. You know? If you want to charge this with involuntary manslaughter, send him to jail as if he had maliciousness in his heart, I guess that's really up to you. I'm not going to be involved. More and more often, you aren't going to be praised for doing this. People are going to say you're nuts. But you're stupid. And if this is an opportunity, typically an opportunity to make out gangbusters, get a lot of money, you know. A lot of pain is mitigated by dollar signs. And that's sad. That's sad. I don't think it really does matter. I think people end up coming back and saying, oh, yeah, I wish I hadn't been that. I wish I hadn't done that. Sad. It's a sad, sad thing. We have to move on. There are other people that need us. We can't just become one of those sorts of people. Because we're finding that those sorts of people are becoming the majority. And we can't tolerate it. It just can't be tolerated. So, just remember I'm at the end of my walk, and this has been a voice, I don't know what I call this thing anymore. Have a great day.